such a morbid imagination.
Bringing dead things to life.
Hey, she emerges from her cave.
Ella.
When do you think you'll finish this film of yours?
Immediately.
What's all that stuff?
It's called stop-motion animation. What do you think?
It's a bit boring.
It's not finished. It's not boring.
Make a new one.
A new one?
Yeah. I know a better story. You want to hear it? There's a girl. She's scared. There's someone coming.
Who's coming?
The man no one wants to meet.
The Ashman.
You can bring it to life.
What does the Ashman do?
Don't be scared.
Whatever it is you think you saw back there, it's not real.
I don't want to make this film anymore.
Don't you want to hear the next bit of the story?
I want to go.
I want to go.
What happens when it takes on a life of its own?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest episode of Fresh Cuts. This is Mike. Joining me, as always, it's Mr. Venom. What's up, Venom?
Greetings and salutations, animators. I'm not sure if any animators actually listen to us, but if you do, how the hell are you doing? And how the hell are you doing, Mike?
Doing well. I don't really have anything to add. Just doing well. It's definitely springtime up here now. It's lighter later in the day, so... More daytime, yay. Also with us, it's Don and Ellie. What's up, Don?
Yeah, what's going on? Trying to duck thunder showers, which popped up about 10 minutes ago. So, Yeah. I know I'm not usually the most talkative of the three, but if you guys don't see me for a few minutes, that's kind of what happened. So, Not that I'm risking life and limb to do this, but I thought I'd say it just because it happened about 5 minutes before we came on. So between the three of us, if you don't see me for a few minutes, that's what happens. So, other than that, doing good and always happy to be here.
All right. Well. In the midst of all these theatrical releases, we still did actually have a gap week, and that was this past week where there was nothing theatrical. So we kind of settled on one that it actually had like a short theatrical release. I'm not sure if it was wide or not. I know it had showtimes here, but it was very limited. Like you basically had to get there or it would be gone. It's now currently just on regular VOD to rent, and then it's coming to Shudder. I think soon, maybe next month. So we kind of went with the middle option where we didn't catch it on the show for the theatrical release, but we're not waiting for the Shudder release. We're kind of doing the middle ground, the VOD release, and that would be Stop Motion. And the synopsis is as follows. A stop motion animator struggles to control her demons after the loss of her overbearing mother. All right. Were we able to control our demons watching stop motion? Let's find out. Venom, we'll start with you. What were your general thoughts on the movie Stop Motion?
Okay, I have this weird quirk when I'm watching movies, and I understand that I'm in the minority on this one, so bear with me. But it's the kind of thing where when I'm watching a new horror film, when it starts to remind me of a certain movie, and then it continues going and it continues reminding me of that certain movie, I start to lose interest in the movie that I'm watching. It doesn't necessarily mean that the movie is bad. My most recent example of this would be The Night House. You guys remember The Night House from a couple of years ago. Really, really good movie. Well done, well performed, well directed. But once I realized that it was basically Final Destination in a shiny new package, I kind of start to lose interest in the movie. And despite it being objectively good, I definitely didn't praise the film when we reviewed it. So here we are a couple of years later, and it's the exact same thing. This movie is objectively well made. It's well performed. It's well directed, well edited. It's got a good score. Like, there's not really a whole lot of negative stuff to nitpick with this movie. It's damn near the best movie we've reviewed this year. But because about 25 to 30 minutes into this movie, I realized that it's basically a rehash of a certain 1960 horror movie that I will leave nameless for now, just for the sake of spoilers. Once I realized that it was kind of a rehash of that movie, the same thing started to happen. I started to find myself losing interest in it. I will say, though, this movie, there are some great sequences in here. All of the stop-motion animation looks great. And, you know, when you really truly understand the context, and I'm not saying that I necessarily think that I do, but when you actually get the context of all these different stop-motion sequences, it just adds so much more to the movie. It adds so much more to our character's downward spiral, just all of that. But again, this movie is objectively a good film. Is it going to end up in my top 10 at the end of the year? I don't think so, only because, like I said, I've got that funny little quirk where once I realize this is just a rehash of something else I've already seen, it almost starts to lose credibility in my eyes. And, you know, I don't do this often. I definitely don't watch new horror movies with the intention of seeing what they remind me of. Not at all. But literally, when I watch this movie in the theater, like I said, about a half hour into the film, I'm just like, oh, this is that movie. And then as the movie goes along, it's like, yep, it's that movie. Yep, it's that movie. It's just scene after scene after scene. Now, I'm not saying that it's a carbon copy, not by any stretch. And once I announce the movie during the spoiler section, I'm sure a lot of you have already figured it out. I'm positive my hosts have figured it out as I named this chat that particular movie. But It's a weird thing. Like I said, I'm probably not the right person to give an opinion on this movie because, like I said, it is objectively well made. It is a damn good movie. Isling, our main star, Isling Franciosi, does an amazing job, I think, as Ella. You know, her mother, the domineering, controlling type, played by Stella Gonet. Just really, really good performances all the way around. The stop motion is great. And then the third act really brought me back around. Like, the third act definitely veers heavily away from that 1960 movie that it reminds me of. And that's when it kind of brought me back into it. And I started getting into it again. And then the ending, I actually love the ending of this movie. It definitely left me with a smile on my face. So I'm just going to leave my general thoughts as saying that this is really an objectively good film. I'm going to keep saying that because I just don't want people to think that I think this movie is bad just because maybe elements of it didn't work for me or it wasn't as entertaining as I was hoping that it would be, things like that. I don't want you to think that I'm poo-pooing the film by any stretch. This is a damn fine film, potentially one of the best of the year thus far. Like I said, it's just because of that weird quirk that I have, I start to lose interest in the movie when I realize it's something else. So, I mean, let's see if my co-hosts agree with me. Maybe they agree, maybe they don't. Either way, it's fine. But like I said, once I made that correlation to that original film, I just start to kind of lose interest in this one. I start to kind of realize where it's going. And this one didn't go where I thought it was going. That's why the third act brought me back around. I really did enjoy, you know, the visceral aspect of the third act and just the way that it ended, the way that the whole thing was wrapped up. It really, really worked well for me. It's just, you know, I wish that this movie didn't remind me of that other movie, of that other much better movie. You know what I mean? So I'm just going to leave it at that because I'm going to end up saying something that I shouldn't. So, yeah, it's a great film. It is. It just doesn't work as well for me because of how much it reminds me of something else. So I'll leave it at that. Go ahead, Mike.
All right. I will kick it over to Don. What are your thoughts on Stop Motion?
Yeah, I'm kind of similar to Venom, although I have a slightly different film in question. Where this one was taking me, I had a slightly more current mindset than where you were with being the 60s. But I can see your points. Again, I have inside knowledge knowing the name of the Skype chat we're using. So, yeah, that kind of makes a little bit of sense. I can't say much, but that wasn't my initial impression. I had a slightly more modern film in mind, which is similar to you, kind of took me out of it just a little bit. I would also have to say that this type of story is not for me. I'm not a general psychological horror fan. Those films are probably like my second least favorite style ever. It didn't really work for me. In that sense, just because the style's not really one that I gravitate towards. I usually will probably end up only watching those just as screener requests or, you know, podcast, you know, I stumble upon them by accident rather than seeking them out. It's not for me. I'm, you know, much more of, you know, I come, you know, you guys know I'm more of an action guy. You know, that's really more my style, my tempo, my viewpoint, and I generally like to go with films that are a little bit more, not this, I guess, is my what I'm trying to say. So it didn't have the greatest starting point to, you know, win me over. But, yeah, it started to, you know, work its way in there a little bit. Some of the imagery here is really, really unnerving and kind of it helps a lot, especially in the second act. Although I will say that eventually over time, it started reminding me of a second film, or I should say a third film. There is very much a third film that it started reminding me of, which Venom you will have a very intimate knowledge of since you and I covered it on our other show. So that should be a little hint there, and I'll save spoilers until later, but. Yeah, it's one of those where I can't say that this is objectively a bad movie. I mean, I do like a lot of where it goes on here. I do like the look. I do like the storyline, where it's going, what's happening here. It's just, it's a style that's not something I gravitate towards. And that kind of makes it really hard for me to get into it. And I don't have much bad to say about it. It's just, it's a style that doesn't really work as often for me. And it's nothing to do with the film itself. It's just, it's a style that I'm not a huge fan of. And that kind of makes it really hard for me to go into it and get as much out of it as others. So, yeah, I do, like I said, I do like aspects of it. I do agree. I do like the third act. I think that's, you know, easily the best part of the movie. You know, that's kind of, you know, all the pieces start falling together. A lot of, you know, the, I can't say that that's a spoiler, but, yeah, the third act, like he said, is the best part. I do like that a lot. And, you know, there is some genuinely unnerving imagery. There is some really, you know, creepy moments here and there, but yeah, just overall, not really one that I'm really looking forward to, you know, either revisiting or going, you know, watching again. It's, you know, just, it's not a film for me, but I don't have any real issues with it. Just, it, you know, the style's not really one that I gravitate towards. So, yeah, at the expense of saying something I'm going to spoil, I'll just leave it at that and say it back to you, Mike.
All right. So let's see. How can I put it? Like, I did enjoy the movie. I didn't think it was great. I thought it was pretty good, above average. I do think, like, the first two-thirds of it, though, it is kind of a slow-burn, psychological-style movie, so if that's not your thing, yeah, you might like it a little less. I think it does rebound in the third act, where it kind of becomes, like, full-on horror. Like, you get bits and pieces of what the third act is promising throughout the movie, but it really doesn't go full-on until, what, that last 20 minutes or so. I think there's a better movie in here potentially to be made. I do like a lot of the themes like it explores. I think that you know, one of the messages is like how much of yourself you give over to your art or your creativity, or I could even be a hobby, like how much of yourself is immersed in that. I also think you know, sacrificing for your art, kind of along the same thing. I also think there's a theme of, like, when you're kind of following in the footsteps of parents, maybe, how much are you doing it for, you know, yourself, as opposed to, like, being in the shadow or things being dictated? Because I think there's some subtext about, like, almost being a puppet, the main character of themselves, in the way that it's explained, which, you know, I can't really elaborate, otherwise that'd be spoilers, but I think we get a little bit from the characters at the beginning in the first act to kind of set up our story. And so I think there's good in this movie. I saw the potential for it to be better. Still liked it. I thought, like, the stop motion was cool. I thought there was a lot of grotesque conceptual art in this, which is pretty neat. There was a disturbing child character kind of in this, which was neat. I wasn't expecting that to happen. But overall, yeah, I liked it. Didn't love it, but I did like it. And like I said, I think it's one of those movies where it's like you come out thinking it was pretty good, but man, it could have been great with like a little bit of a tinkering here and there. But yeah, I would say for those that missed it in the theater, if you sub to Shudder, catch it on Shudder. Like, it'll be there. And considering like what's been on Shudder lately, this is gonna, at least to me, this is gonna come off a lot better than a lot of what Shudder's been grabbing.
Ain't that the truth?
So yeah, so definitely when, once this hits like your new, what do they call it, the featured feed, I think at the top, once, yeah, it the hits carousel. The once it hits the featured news section, jump on it, because yeah, it's going to be a huge upgrade over a lot of that stuff. So yeah. I really
can't see that this being much of a discovery on VOD. Like, this really should be more of a, you know, free app that you subscribe to, kind of a discovery. I think it's just way too
tired. I agree.
I'm actually really glad I saw it in theaters. Like, the movie is very visual. Obviously, it's too late for anyone to watch it in theaters now, unless you live in LA, because yes, this movie is still playing out here. Believe it or not, a month after, at least, it's got to be at least a month, right, Mike? That you got that short run out there. It's still playing at one of the AMCs out here almost a month later. So it must be making some money out here for them to keep that one up, because it's on their small screen, you know, where they usually put like independent films and whatnot. But yeah, it's still playing out here, because I went this weekend to go see Love Lies Bleeding, and it still had a screen. So that's pretty awesome. But yeah, I totally agree with Mike. I like this movie. I did not love it. I wish it could have been a little bit more original. I wish it could have been a little bit less psychological and more visceral. Because like I said, it gets visceral in the third act, but by that point, I think most people have already kind of made their judgment calls on the film. Because like Mike said, it's a slow burn. It absolutely is a slow burn. I'm the kind of person that, unless a side character plays a major part in the actual main character's story arc, I don't really care about them that much. And even though the brother and the Ella's brother, or excuse me, Ella's boyfriend and her boyfriend's sister, even though they do end up playing a fairly large role late in the film, whenever we saw them throughout the film, I just didn't care. Like, all the relationship stuff, like, I don't even know why the relationship stuff is in here. It doesn't, at least to me, it doesn't add a whole hell of a lot to the movie. But, again, that's just me, you know, always kind of harping about forced romances. And this one doesn't feel forced, you know. It's not pigeonholed. It's just, it's a part of her character. She has a boyfriend. Her boyfriend cares about her to the point where he gives her a free apartment in a building that he manages, so that she can go ahead and, you know, quote unquote, finish her movie. So it's not like the characters were completely unlikable. It just, they didn't really do a whole hell of a lot for me until, you know, the end, when they had a fairly pivotal role in how the movie end, you know, finishes off. So, I don't know. What else can we talk about that's spoiler free? Good performances.
One thing I forgot to mention, you know, go ahead. One thing I forgot to mention is I do agree with Don. There were some modern movies that this reminded me of, which we can get into in spoilers.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I thought of at least six different movies as I'm watching this that had that this movie had little homages to, which is fine. But the, you know, like the one that I'm going to be harping on later, it just, it really just, with every scene, it just kept hammering it in and hammering it in. That it just reminded me of this particular movie. And I'm sure a lot of people are going to disagree with me when I finally reveal this. A lot of people who've seen both movies are going to say, no, they're two totally different movies, but I will justify, you know, my opinions. I'll tell you specific scenes and specific events in this movie that remind me of that other movie. So, like I said, good performances, good score. I can't really think of too much else that we could really harp on. We've already talked about the stop motion sequences being pretty cool, being unnerving. The movie really does have, I think Don alluded to this, the movie really does have a lot of really cool imagery throughout. There's a quick shot of the mom, of Ella's mom, but like it quickly flashes to her as a meat puppet, and that's very early in the film, but it kind of alludes to where the movie is going, and it's kind of cool. And even the concept of meat puppets, we are all meat puppets. We are all puppets to somebody. We all have a job, we have careers, we have kids, whatever the case may be, we're all somebody's puppet. So that iconography just was really striking there so early in this film too, to kind of let you know, where this film is going. So I do appreciate that. Like I said, a really well shot movie, nice cinematography, some cool shots. Obviously the entirety of the movie takes place indoors. So it's not like you're getting, you know, scenic lush, you know, nature shots by any stretch, but the shots that we're getting inside, you know, they're dark and dingy and depressing when they need to be, but they're, you know, they're also bright and colorful when they need to be. So yeah, decent, good cinematography, good set design. Like I said, there's nothing that I can really nitpick on this movie that I can point at and say, oh, you shouldn't have done that, or oh, you could have done this better. I think we've all kind of alluded to the same thing, that we like the movie, but that we all wish that there was a little bit more, you know, maybe a little bit more horror and less thriller, or, you know, like I mentioned earlier, make it a little bit more visceral as opposed to psychological, things like that. So, but there is a lot here for people to enjoy. And I think when this does hit Shudder, it's probably going to get a little bit of a resurgence in popularity. Not that the movie was ever ultra popular. I mean, it's only been playing in theaters for a few weeks now. But yeah, when it hit Shudder, it's kind of like when Evil Lurks. If you remember, that had like a 2-week theatrical run, and you heard a few people talk about it, but then when it hit Shudder, suddenly everyone in the community is talking about it. You know, they're either raving about it or putting it down. But the point is, it was the flavor of the week for a little while. I think that's what's going to happen with stop motion. It's going to hit Shudder, and because Shudder is having a fairly weak 2024, there's going to be a lot of word of mouth about this movie. Ooh, did you see that new, you know, stop motion movie on Shudder? You should check it out, blah, blah, blah. And not just Shudder's weak 2024, but horror cinema in general is having a weak 2024. That's why I said it's potentially one of the best movies of the year. I don't think it's going to end up in my top 10 at the end of the year, not by any stretch, but As of March 18, 2024, it is one of the best movies of the year, sadly. Not my favorite by any stretch, but a damn solid movie.
Yeah, I think it just barely crashes out of my top 10. But, I mean, the fact that this is still a top 10 this late in the month, this late in the year.
Yeah, I mean, for Don to have a psychological thriller in his top 10, that doesn't bode well for the year.
Yeah.
So, all right, folks, this is going to be your final spoiler warning. This is going to be a weird walkthrough because there's a lot of conceptual scenes in this movie that I'm not going to go over. I'm not going to go over every single stop motion animation sequence because they really need to be seen to be fully experienced. Plus, like I said, I understand the context of at least, I'd say, 80 to 90% of those sequences, but there's still some that kind of leave me scratching my head, especially towards the end of the film. So this is going to be just a very general walkthrough, probably one of the quicker ones we've ever done. So here we go. Our movie opens up with Ella in, like, almost like she's in a club with flashing strobe lights, and every time a light flashes, her expression on her face changes. It's kind of funny because on rewatch, this scene is very telling. When you watch the movie for the first time, you know, you don't really get a lot of context out of it. But as for a rewatch, it's like, this makes a whole lot more sense now, what's going on with the flashing and her changing facial expressions every time the lighting flashes. So after this, we see that Ella is a stop motion animator, but she's not working for herself. She's actually working with her mother, by the name of Suzanne Blake. Ella's last name is also Blake. Ella Blake and Suzanne Blake. Suzanne, the mother, is an accomplished, stop motion animator. She's been doing it for years. You know, she's famous, in the community, in the stop motion animation community. People know her. People who know Ella know that Ella is this woman's daughter, so they're always asking, you know, how's your mother, blah, blah, blah. Unfortunately, Suzanne, the mother, has arthritis. She currently is dealing with arthritis, so she's not able to manipulate the puppets. If you know anything about stop-motion animation, it's very, very small movements, and then you take a single-frame picture, and then you move it again, and, oh, God, it just seems so monotonous, and I'm surprised more stop motion animators don't go crazy because it seems like it's a career rife with downward spiral.
How many is left? How many is left?
That's true. I mean, Phil.
That's what I'm saying. I think the only Phil's probably the last one left.
Yeah, I believe it. And whoever did the sequences in this movie, I mean, somebody had to do it. I don't think Phil Tippett did these.
True. But I didn't see his name yet because you figured that would have been like marketing material.
Absolutely, yeah. That, especially after he put out his, you know, 30-year-in-the-making movie a couple of years ago, yeah. Definitely. So anyway, like I said, Ella and Suzanne, they're working on Suzanne's final movie. It looks like it's about a Cyclops. So, you know, we see how the mother kind of dictates everything that Ella does, every move, like to the half millimeter, you know. And if Ella doesn't do exactly what her mother asks her to, she ends up getting, you know, yelled at, demeaned a little bit. So that establishes that relationship. We see that Ella has a boyfriend. Her boyfriend's name Tom. The actor's name is Tom York, too, so that makes it easy for her to remember. Tom, yeah, he's a businessman of some kind. He wears a suit and tie to go to work. I'm not 100% sure. Advertising. That's right. He works for an advertising agency. And then he's a part-time musician in his spare time. His sister is also a Tom's sister is also a stop-motion animator. And they actually hang out with a circle of friends that are all stop-motion animators. So it's like you got a little community of animators here. Eventually, Suzanne has a stroke. Or a stroke or heart attack. I think it was a stroke because her speech was slurred right before she passed out. That's usually a symptom of a stroke. So Suzanne has a stroke and is taken to the hospital. While in the hospital, Ella doesn't really know what to do. She wants to continue her mother's movie, but as you can tell, she doesn't really have a lot of passion for this particular project because it's her mother's project. And she, in a conversation with her boyfriend, you know, Tom tells her, well, you know, with your mother in the hospital, you can finally work on something of your own and, you know, let the world hear your voice. And then a very key line comes right after this where Ella says, I've never had my own voice. I feel like this is a very key line because I feel like this is the exact moment where Ella's psychosis starts to take over. Because literally in the very next scene after this, Ella is moving into, as I mentioned earlier, her boyfriend gives her an apartment in an apartment building that he manages that's fairly empty. Like there's no other tenants in there. There might be one or two other tenants in the building. And he gives her the apartment so that she can, you know, work quietly and potentially either finish her mother's project or work on something of her own. And like I said, right after they have that conversation where Ella says, I've never had my own voice, she meets this little girl. And unfortunately, this little girl doesn't have a name in the credits. She's just little girl. So she's going to be the little girl for the rest of this walkthrough. This little girl is, you know, she introduces herself. She's very excited that, you know, Ella is living in the building and working on, as she calls them, cartoons. The little girl obviously doesn't see the difference between like cel-shaded animation and stop motion animation, things like that. So, but when Ella shows the little girl her movie about this, or her mother's movie, I should say, about the Cyclops couple, the little girl says it's kind of boring. And, you know, Ella kind of takes offense. She's like, no, it's not boring. It's just not finished. And the little girl says, we should start over and start a new movie. And the little girl, Ella obviously at first is kind of, you know, apprehensive. You know, she doesn't want to just abandon her mother's project. But at the same time, she doesn't really feel much passion for that project. So she actually talks to the little girl and asks her, okay, so what's your story? And it's a very basic story about a little girl being pursued by a nefarious figure in the woods. And that's basically just the start of it. And from that, Ella, you know, starts the seeds of a new movie. She starts working on new puppets. You know, she starts animating certain sequences. And then eventually the little girl comes over, sees that Ella is working on her movie and is all excited. And continue, basically the little girl, it doesn't tell Ella the entire story. She's telling her the story in sections, almost like she's making sure that Ella doesn't like steal her story and like, you know, go run away. So she's only conveying the story in sections. And the basic story is, like I said, a little girl in the woods being chased by a nefarious figure. And eventually they end up naming the figure the Ash Man. So the Ash Man is like our stop-motion villain of the movie, if you will. The little girl conveys that the Ash Man visits all his victims for three nights in a row. And she just tells her on the first night, he sees her. The Ash Man sees the little girl. And then we get a stop-motion animated sequence of exactly that scene that the little girl just described. Of this, you know, little girl scared running around the woods. And then we see this, you know, scary looking figure, dark figure, banging at the door of the shed that the little girl is hiding in, things like that. So, well, let's go past this. Eventually, Ella, you know, is conflicted about going back and finishing her mother's movie or continuing with this little girl story. But it seems like every time she puts that new project off to the side, the little girl just appears and says, okay, let's work on our movie. You know, like this little girl is very convenient in her appearances throughout the film. Obviously, there's a logical explanation for that, but we'll get to that in a little bit. So what ends up happening is, one day, the little girl tells Ella, I don't like the embalmer's putty that you use to make the puppets out of. It doesn't look real enough. I think we need to use something else. And Ella's like, well, what can we use? And the little girl says, I found the body of a dead fox out in the woods. We can go get that fox and somehow incorporate, like, its flesh into, you know, the stop-motion puppets. Ella's obviously disgusted at first. And ends up just leaving the little girl at the building. She ends up going to a party, taking drugs. She ends up taking either acid or, you know, just some kind of real trippy hallucinogen. She has a pretty major trip where she has, you know, a bunch of different sequences and visuals playing throughout. I'm not going to go through all of them, like I said. But she ends up ending the trip out in the woods. Like, when she finally comes down, she's in the woods walking around, and she runs into the little girl. The little girl's right there, you know, drinking through her straw like she annoyingly does throughout the entire film. And she's standing, or she's sitting right next to the dead fox in question. And then Ella's like, okay. She kind of concedes and says, okay, fuck it. They end up taking the dead fox back to her apartment. We see Ella start cutting the fox up, and, you know, obviously we don't see too much of it. It's mostly off screen, but what ends up happening is she's taking strips of flesh off of the dead fox and applying them to the armature on the inside of the puppets so that they literally look like meat puppets, if you will, which I'm sure is a major metaphor in this movie. But again, it would probably take someone smarter than me to explain it. So she ends up making she ends up updating both of the puppets, the little girl and the Ash Man, with the flesh of the fox. And then she gets the next part of the story. Now, at this point, Ella doesn't like where the little girl's story is going. She actually wants to kind of change the story. Obviously, the little girl's against it. And at one point, the little girl basically just stops talking and says, okay, finish the story yourself then. And then we see Ella sit down and try to actually write the story, and she gets writer's block. You know, she can't continue. She ends up conceding once again and going with the story that the little girl gave her. Because basically, the little girl tells her that on night number two, the Ash Man touches the little girl. And she doesn't want that to happen. Ella, the animator, she wants the story to have like a happy ending. You know, she doesn't want to see anything bad happen to the little girl character in her movie. That's why she decides, I don't want to do this. But eventually she concedes when she can't end up writing anything better herself. And she goes ahead and animates that sequence. And when we watch that sequence, it's really cool how it's intercut between real life and the stop motion, because basically we get a stop motion figure representing Ella, and we see that figure being chased by the Ash Man in the stop motion animation. But then in real life, we see Ella, the, you know, actual adult Ella, running around being chased by a life-size Ash Man. So it's like they're intercutting between the movie and her hallucination, which I thought was really well done. It's a really nice sequence, actually. Eventually, the Ash Man does touch Ella on the face, and she passes out, and that's the end of that. When she wakes up, when she comes to, she's actually, I think she's in the hospital because she has a cut on her leg. Apparently, her boyfriend and her boyfriend's sister found her in the apartment passed out with a cut, with a pretty nasty gash on her leg. While in the hospital, the little girl once again appears and tells her, we're wasting time. You know, we need to finish this movie. We're doing nothing, just sitting here. So she actually, I'm sorry. I skipped one little piece. Basically, in the hospital, the boyfriend comes to visit her. The boyfriend thinks that Ella did this to herself on purpose, you know, the gash on her leg. So he's worried about her mental health, and he basically makes the decision of, that's it. I'm going to go and empty the apartment. I'm going to throw everything out, and I hopefully that'll help you, you know, get back to reality and, you know, try to get a job and everything. Eventually, there is a scene where Ella ends up trying to get a job at the advertising agency that her boyfriend's sister works at. And then while there, literally on her first day, she realizes that the sister is stealing ideas from her. Basically, she goes to a part of the studio that she's working at, a part of the studio that she's not supposed to be in, and she sees pictures of her own movie up like on a storyboard, you know, like on something that they're working on. She accuses the sister and the director of stealing her stuff. She gets mad, leaves, ends up destroying all the eyeballs that she was working on, the claymation eyeballs, and ends up leaving in a huff. So there's elements of, like, you know, thievery in here, you know, stealing ideas, things like that. So anyway, back at the hospital, little girl tells her, we need to get back because we're wasting time. So when they get back, they do exactly that. They leave the hospital. They go back to the studio. At the studio, the little girl says, I still don't like the way the puppets look. They still don't look real enough. And Ella's like, well, what else can we do? And the little girl just gives her this kind of deceiving little look, you know, almost like a sly smile. And that's when we get a very, very intense stitch ripping scene. Basically, what we see is Ella start to slowly and painfully pull out all the stitches that she just got the night before for the gash on her leg. She eventually, and this is a slow and painful scene, my friends. I hate scenes like this because they're just so, just so painful. It's kind of like dental torture. Oh, it's so hard for me to watch dental torture. Yeah, marathon, man. I can barely watch that. Anyway, the little girl's like, you know, the puppets don't look real enough. Ella decides to, like I said, rip her stitches open and pull out her own flesh. Unfortunately, Ella is just a skinny little British girl, you know, she's not exactly a tough chick. So, you know, she ends up pulling out just this, the tiniest little piece of flesh out of her leg. At that exact moment, her boyfriend and the boyfriend's sister walk into the apartment and see what she's doing. They see that she's busting her own leg open and tearing out tiny little pieces of flesh. Unfortunately, at that moment, I think Ella realizes I need more flesh than this. What flesh I can get off of myself without killing myself is probably not going to cut it. And this is when the movie just goes batshit crazy. At this point, Ella pretends to pass out from the pain of her, you know, pulling the flesh off of her leg. So her boyfriend and the sister start carrying her body outside. Once they get outside of her apartment, out in the hall, she stops pretending to be out cold, kicks the sister in the nose, breaking her nose. And the sister has a gigantic schnoz, by the way. Breaks her nose with a kick and then pushes her boyfriend down a flight of stairs. She ends up grabbing a tripod from the camera that she was using and starts bludgeoning the sister until finally basically stabbing her in the throat with one of the legs of the tripod, to the point that she pulled the leg out, the leg of the tripod out of her neck, and a couple of pieces of flesh came off with it. It was pretty gnarly looking. Then at that moment, so the sister's dead. At that moment, her boyfriend at the bottom of the stairs starts to come to. He starts to wake up. She goes down there and unceremoniously just covers his mouth and pinches his nose and literally just suffocates him. And she's literally staring him in the eyes as she's doing this. My friends, Ella has completely lost it at this point. She's gone total Norman Bates at this point. She kills her boyfriend. She ends up dragging both of the bodies back into her apartment, and then we see her grab a like a box cutter, and she starts slicing bits of flesh off of the sister's leg. Now, it's weird that the movie made this decision that they showed us in grim detail her ripping out flesh from her own leg, but then they don't show us her taking flesh off of one of her victims. I don't know why the movie decided to make that choice. I don't know if it's just easier to show the Ella doing the punishment to herself as opposed to her slicing up somebody else. I don't know. But, yeah, like, as I'm watching that scene, I'm like, why is it all off screen? You fucking made me watch as she slowly ripped out her stitches and then slowly ripped out a chunk of her flesh, but then you won't show me, you know, sister getting sliced up. That kind of pissed me off, but no big deal. So, eventually, she finishes her puppets. The puppets are much taller. They're not quite life-size. The little girl is life-size, but the Ashman is, like, maybe 4.5 or 5 feet tall, maybe. But yeah, she literally made like almost life-size puppets with the flesh from her brother and, from her boyfriend and her boyfriend's sister. So at this point, the puppets come to life and they start to act out the final scene of the movie, which the girl hasn't conveyed the end of the story yet. The little girl hasn't told Ella how the story ends. So I guess this is us watching as the story ends. So what we see is the Ashman and little girl puppets come to life, and they start to walk towards each other. But then suddenly the Ashman puppet turns its head towards Ella and starts walking towards her. The little girl starts going, not the little girl puppet, the actual little girl in the room starts saying, what's going on? Why is he walking towards you? That's not supposed to happen. That's not part of the story. And what we end up seeing is Ella start to run away from the Ashman. She ends up hiding in a closet, but the Ashman eventually does catch her, opens the door, and jumps into the closet with her rather than pull her out. I thought that was kind of funny. He actually opens the door and jumps in there with her. And then it gets even fucking weirder. What ends up happening is she brings Ella brings her hands up to her face, and she starts to peel chunks of her face off like it's made of that embalmer's clay or embalmer's putty, whatever the stuff is that she was using earlier to make the puppets. She grabs a big double-fisted hunk of clay off her face. All the features of her face are gone at this point. Now it's just, you know, like I said, it's like the marks of her fingers being dragged down her face, pulling out a double-fisted clump of the stuff. She then hands it to the Ashman, and the Ashman starts eating it. He starts eating the ball of clay. Then he reaches himself towards Ella's face, grabs his own kind of ball of putty off of the face and starts to eat it. And then we see the camera start to change angle, and we see that the Ashman is actually eating Ella, not eating pieces of her that he pulled off. He's actually like eating her whole, like her head is in his mouth. And basically, you know, he just consumes her completely. We get some weird imagery of a black egg that we see throughout the entirety of the film, right at the very beginning. It's actually the first image we see when the movie starts, that black egg thing just kind of floating there in midair. Eventually, the black egg cracks. We see an image of the egg crack, and then the scene just ends. Then we see Ella suddenly, with no injuries on her, no blood, she's wearing like a beautiful red dress, and she's just kind of walking through the woods. Eventually, she walks into a cabin or like a shed, and she sees the little girl watching the movie on a laptop. She walks up, she stands next to the little girl, and they both look and watch the final product, you know, the movie basically done. Then in the laptop, we see the camera, not the camera of the movie, but the camera on the POV on the laptop. Basically, the camera pans around, and it shows Ella dead on the ground, bleeding from her leg, and she actually has the remote control in her hand, you know, the little clicker to take pictures, to take the individual pictures to put together for the stop motion. So literally, I believe that that's an image of the real world. I think that Ella actually died making her film. Whether she finished it or not, we never get the confirmation in the film. I would have liked to have seen a scene where maybe her movie, you know, ended up getting some kind of praise or whatever. But, you know, obviously she died finishing it, so it's not like there's going to be another one. So like I said, on the laptop, we see that the image of dead Ella, and then the little girl looks back at the Ella that's in the cabin with her and says, I love it. You know, it came out exactly the way I wanted it to. And then we see Ella basically open up one of those big ventriloquist dummy, like crates that they would travel with their ventriloquist dummy in. She opens up the box, climbs into it, closes it, and the movie fades to black, and that's the end of our film. And that last image is actually a reference to something that her mother told her earlier in the film. Earlier in the film, Ella does visit her mother after her mother has the stroke, and she tells her mother how she's working on her own creation, and the mother just laughs at her. She's like, you can't make your own thing. You're a puppet. You can't create anything unless I or someone else are pulling your strings. So obviously when the mother said that to Ella, it had some very deep psychological consequences, because then at the end of the movie, like I said, Ella's final thought as she's dying is her climbing into the ventriloquist dummy box, because when you're done with the puppet, the puppet goes back in the box. So Ella's story is done and has been told. So she symbolically goes into the box, I'm assuming, to just accept her death. Because, like I said, I think that she died in the real world finishing her movie, you know, based on the images that we saw on the laptop there. But, yeah, there you go. That is Stop Motion 2024. And if you're wondering about the movie that this reminds me of, you should have figured it out by now because I mentioned Norman Bates earlier. This movie is Psycho, my friends. In my opinion, the majority of this movie is Psycho just in a fancy new package because we still have the domineering mother. We still have the child who can't do anything for themselves, can't think, can't, you know, can't be creative. They don't do anything unless they're told to do so. And then once that mother is gone, the child has a mental break. Norman had a mental break after he, well, Norman's mental break was just before he killed his mother and her lover. Ella's mental break was obviously right after her mother died because she, you know, she, there's even a great conversation in the movie, and I mentioned this during the walkthrough, how she says, I don't have my own voice. And then in the very next fucking scene, we meet the little girl for the first time, who, by the way, I never mentioned it. The little girl looks exactly like Ella. I'm thinking that Ella imagines this girl to be herself at that age because that was the last time her mother allowed her to be creative. Because kids are endlessly creative. They have amazing imagination. So, but eventually every kid becomes, you know, that angsty teenager where they start to lose their creativity. And I feel like that's the reason why the little girl looks, that's the age that she chose because that was the last time that she herself felt creative. So here is this little girl now basically personifying her voice. That's how I look at it. The little girl's the personification of her voice or her creativity, you know, whichever you want to go with. Which is why, again, this movie, it's just one of the many reasons that this movie reminds me of Psycho. But now I am going to relinquish the floor because I'm very curious to hear what Mike and Don, because they both mentioned that this movie reminded them of other movies. And I didn't mention any of the other movies that I saw homages to. I want to see if we're kind of all on the same page. So, yeah, Mike, Don, tell me about the other movies that this one reminds you of.
Yeah, the main one for me was Censor. Censor was the main one for me. I mean, a lot of the, you know, imagery at the final act, you know, the cabin, you know, being out in the woods, you know, fantasy meets reality, shooting a movie. I can see Psycho. A lot of that, though, is kind of just implied folklore. Yeah, like I said, I mean, it's not like, you know, overt homages, but I mean, you know, when you said it and when I saw the chat, I mean, I can see it, but I mean, for me, the main one was Censor. Mm-hmm. A lot of the stop motion stuff, obviously Mad God. But yeah, for me, Censor was pretty much the main one. You know, the person that goes, you know, psychologically unhinged over the course of the film based on, you know, their creative practices and, you know, being around films and all that kind of stuff.
I hear you. Yep, I'll go with that. I don't know. Personally, I don't think that it was the art that was necessarily making her go down her spiral. I think it was definitely the mother, which is that's why I made the Psycho connection.
Like I said, I mean, as soon as I saw the chat, I saw where you're coming from. So yeah, I know where you, I see where your connection comes from. Just. Yeah. For me, I didn't make that initially when I saw it just because that was more implied folklore than anything, but I get
it. Sure, yep. Mike,
I thought kind of like a, almost like a reverse twist on like May, where you have kind of this quirky girl dedicated to, I mean, I don't want to like spoil May for people who haven't seen it, but this one she's almost making puppets out of like, herself in a way, in some of her own body parts. Right. once we get like some of the grotesque scenes, I thought it was pretty interesting. The design, I was trying to think of what the creature design reminded me of, but I just think the stop motion overall, like blending the stop motion with just like traditional film, it was super fun. It was super cool to look at too. I thought it was pretty well done. But yeah, May's the one I thought I had another one in mind too, but now it's like escaping me. But
No, well, definitely. I see everything you guys are saying. I see May. I see Censor. Obviously, Mad God. That's an easy one.
Mad God.
But, I mean, like I said, this is a movie that it's probably going to remind a lot of people about different movies, you know, whether everyone gets the Psycho connection or the Censor connection or the May connection. I think it's going to, you know, remind people of something they've seen in the past. But as I've already said about 18 times, and I'm going to say it one last time, this movie is good. It is objectively good, well made, well directed, well edited, good score, well performed, like good effects, like everything about it is spot on. It's really just going to be a matter of if this story works for you. If you're a fan of psychological thrillers that kind of turn into visceral horror later in the film, then this might be the movie for you. If you're a fan of psychological thrillers in general, I would highly recommend this one. Even if you're not really into the more visceral stuff that happens in the third act, I still think there's a lot here for psychological thriller fans in the first two acts. And then the very end of the movie, of course, and trying to unpack what that all means. So, yeah, no, overall, I did enjoy the movie. Just like you guys, I just wish it was a little bit more, just a little bit more viscera, a little bit more, even a little bit more of the mom. Like, I would have liked to have seen more of the mom's relationship with the daughter, because we only really get like 5 minutes before she has her stroke. And then we just kind of have to fill in the blanks, which is fine. It's not that big a deal, but, I would have liked to have seen a little bit more of the mom just really, you know, being that Norman Bates mother type character. But, I still really did enjoy the film. So, yeah, I still recommend it. I think everybody should check it out. I think it comes out on Shudder like the first week of April, like 3 weeks away. So check that out. If you can't wait, it is available on VOD currently for $5.99. So check that out. And it is worth the money, if you ask me. If you can't wait for Shudder, or if you don't have a Shudder subscription and want to just rent it, I would say it is worth the $5.99. So check it out.
Cool. All right. Well, with that said, that's going to wrap up our discussion on Stop Motion. I was almost going to say May. On Stop Motion. So coming up on the next episode, here's the thing. There's two releases. I don't think there's any question about which one we're covering. Probably Late Night with the Devil. Now, if there's nothing releasing the following week in the theaters, then we'll have the option to do Immaculate that week, because that also releases this week. So it kind of gives us two theatrical movies for the next 2 weeks, even if there's not a brand new one the following week.
No, the following week is Godzilla Kong.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but you guys are most definitely.
Yeah, we're doing that. Yeah.
We're covering that. You're not.
Damn right. So yeah, there's actually nothing in the theater that week that you're out of town. There's nothing new in the theater, so we could do Immaculate that week, no problem.
Okay, yeah. And I'll find time to see it at some point, because I was even thinking about seeing Late Night of the Devil, because I think I can go as early as Thursday. I might see it and then see Immaculate on Sunday, just out of concern for what my availability will be to go to the movies next weekend. You know, but
Right. I mean, hell, if you watch both movies this weekend, I'm very not against recording both episodes, you know, kind of back to back, and then just holding the second one for the week that you're out of town.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. We have options.
Depends on if I can get to Immaculate, but it's something to talk about for sure.
Yep.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. Don't got to set anything in stone yet. So, all right.
Yeah, the only thing to set in stone right now is Late Night with the Devil, because trust me, that lives up to the hype.
Yes, I'm excited.
Good to hear. All right, well, before we get out, final point of business is to see what else we've been putting out lately. So, Venom, I'll kick it over to you. What do you got?
Yeah, we got lots of stuff. I'm so excited. I've been an editing fucking beaver lately. Woo! All right, so first things first, No More Room in Hell presents Creature Comforts. Episode 24 is the new episode. On the episode, I said it was episode 25. What I meant to say is that it was our 25th episode, because you know, we've done 24 regular episodes, and then we did the Fantasia festival special. So we've done 25 episodes, but the new episode is actually number 25. And with that one, we looked at 1995 Species. That was actually our Women in Horror Month selection. We have a little bit of a funny conversation how this maybe wasn't the best Women in Horror Month movie to choose. But, you know, it's still a fun time, quick episode, so check that out. That is available as we speak, as you're listening to this one, that episode's available. And then another episode that is also available, No More Room in Hell presents the Crystal Lake Gift Shop. Yes, after almost a year of renovations, the Crystal Lake Gift Shop has reopened, and we have a returning guest, Miss Lacey Liu, joining us for episode 4. And if you guys don't know, the Crystal Lake Gift Shop is, of course, our episode-by-episode retrospective of the Friday the 13th series that aired from 1987 to 1990. On the latest episode, we look at episode number 4 of Friday the 13th, the series, which was entitled A Cup of Time, about a cursed teacup. So check that out. That episode is also available as we speak. Unfortunately, the main show was postponed this weekend for a family obligation. So hopefully this coming weekend we'll go ahead and record our next episode of No More Room in Hell, which is what? What are we up to, like 57 or 58? I'm always bad with the episode numbers. Even the ones that I edit, I'm bad with.
Pretty sure this will be 58, yeah.
There you go. Okay, so hopefully episode 58 of the main show will get recorded this weekend and will be out later on. And then just like we announced on the latest episode of Creature Comforts, next month's episode of Creature Comforts will cover, of course, Godzilla vs. Kong 2, The New Empire, releasing in theaters on March 29th. We're going to get together hopefully soon after that weekend so we can get that episode out while opinions are still fresh. So it's going to be a quick turnaround for Creature Comforts. It looks like I'm going to have another episode out for you in less than 3 weeks, so look out for that one. Woo! And that's pretty much all I've got.
All right, Don, what do you got?
Yeah, in addition to Creature Comforts and both of the announcements that are related to that, my guest spot on the Horror Returns, where I did a double bill of Giallos with the guys. That one's not the latest episode. They've released one since then, but go ahead and give that one a listen. And after the snafu that happened last week, I've got a new episode out of Horror Countdown. I had my guest and I look at our top 10 gateway horror films to introduce kids to the genre. So, probably a pretty important topic and, you know, one that I think a lot of people are going to have opinions on, but definitely that's the that one's out there for you all. And I should mention that I'm getting real close to having one of my guest spots come out. We're looking forward to the next couple of weeks, I'm told. So hopefully that one will come out sooner rather than later. But, yeah, until it's released, I'm not saying anything yet, but hopefully within the next week or two, I'll hopefully have something for you on that one. So really excited about that one, but like I said, just gonna have to wait a little bit longer. But in the meantime, yeah, the Creature Comfort stuff and then the latest episode of Horror Countdown. But I guess that's all for now.
All right, cool. Well, with that said, thank you everyone for listening to another episode of Fresh Cuts. We will be back soon with another episode of probably, at least for hardcore fans, one of the most looked forward to movies this year. I know a lot of us were like crossing our fingers last year that it was going to get released in 2023, but I guess it just gave us something to look forward to for a year that started out so slow with quality horror. So maybe this will help kick off a turnaround. But that said, let's say bye to our listeners.
Later.
Two good movies 2 weeks in a row? That's impossible.